Turn on the recording. You probably have to all guy click OK that you know that it's recording, because otherwise Zoom has a way of knocking us out. Okay, then let's jump right in. We're going to share screen and okay, this is now. Okay, this is where we were up to, Parakeet Gimel. I did send in one of my emails, I sent a copy of the source page, so I hope you got it. If you did not, then let me know. But I will post it here for the share itself, so we have a visual of it. And the other thing is just a matter of housekeeping. If you did, if you received a link to like a little Google form to fill out that gives me email and morning, evening session, etc. If we could trouble you to just fill that out if you haven't done so already, that way I have a full list of emails and participants. Okay, let's jump into the story. So last week we read through Parakeet Gimel, a very difficult parak in total. It's a difficult story, but essentially acharichen, in the aftermath of everything that transpired, we spent a year talking about in terms of the story of David and Bathsheba. We come to Avshalom and Amnon and Tamar and the very sordid story that takes place. And it starts with this cryptic statement, Vayech Rechenu Avshalom ben David Achot. Avshalom ben David has a sister who is very beautiful, Yafa, Shmat Tamar, by the name of Tamar, Vayaveh Amnon ben David. And Amnon, son of David, loved her. And that story then trans kind of s snowballs into she's sort of kind of out of reach for him, half sister and what have you, and he gets lovesick from it, and finally in walks this cousin Yonadav ben Shimaa Achi David, and he suggests to Amnon that he feign an illness. From that illness, David will come and say, "What can I do to help?" And he'll suggest that Tamar, his sister, come and help provide him with food. And so it happens. And then, of course, Amnon turns and attacks Tamar. And then we spent most of this year last week talking about the fact that David, while he hears about it and he's very angry about it and emotionally distraught by the events within that have transpired, he's in a position where he's unable to act. He's unable to exact any kind of leadership. He's unable to respond and react to Amnon's attack on Tamar. In the end, that leaves no choice but for Avshalom to take matters into his own hands, and at the end of the parak, Avshalom orchestrates so that they are out in the field, and Avshalom has his servants kill Amnon in revenge for what he did to Tamar. Avshalom then runs away, flees to the land of Geshur Melech Tamar Melech Geshur, which is his grandfather. We'll talk about that in a moment. And that's how the parak ends.
Is Shalom and Amon brothers?
Yes, so they're brothers. We're gonna get to that lineage in a second. That's really the core of the issue, is who's who in this family. And that's really what I wanted to start with this evening. What is the relationship? Who is Avshalom? Who is Amnon? And who is Tamar? We have a very sordid story, a very strange sequence of events, but it starts with this statement: Avshalom ben David has a sister, and Amnon ben David loved her. Well, if Avshalom and Amnon are both children of David, then why is Tamar Avshalom's sister and not Amnon's sister? That's an odd description. Add to that, the description gets even stranger because, on some level, Amnon and Avshalom, or on some level, Tamar is in fact Avshalom's sister and Tamar's sister. What do I mean by that? I'm going to read a couple of psukim and just pay attention to the description of Tamar. Right, so just to highlight who Tamar is, and that's sort of as I read, just pay attention to that question. Who is Tamar? Avshalom ben David achot yefa u'shma Tamar. Avshalom ben David has a sister, her name is Tamar. So who is Tamar? Avshalom's sister. Fine. Vayetzel Amnon lehitchalot ba'avur Tamar achato. Amnon was distressed, felt sick because of his sister Tamar. Ki betulahi ve'ipale be'enei Amnon lasot lama'uma. Because as a young maiden, unmarried, a virgin, it was impossible. Amnon felt that she was kind of inaccessible to him. So who is Tamar? Who is Tamar here? You're all on mute, so if you want to speak, you got to press your little space button.
Amnon's sister.
Okay. Amnon's sister. And that's an oddity. Like on the one hand, you have Avshalom ben David and Amnon ben David, and then you have this Tamar, who's described as Avshalom's sister, and she's described as Tamar's sister. And if you go through the rest of the story, as it kind of unfolds, you'll hear the emphasis on both these messages. Pasuk Dalid Vayomer Lo Yonadav. We're going to talk about Yonadav a little bit later, but Yonadav ben Shim'a b'achid David enters into the conversation, and he says to Amnon, "Vayomer lo madu atakach adal ben Hamelach b'boker, why you become kind of leaner and skinnier every day? You don't look well. You look malnourished. Tagidli." And Amnon says, "Tamar achot Avshalom achi ani oev. I have fallen in love with Tamar Avshalom, my brother's sister." Which is a very roundabout way of describing her, but essentially she is described how? As?
Avshalom's sister.
Avshalom's sister.
Maybe Avshalom is kind of her guard because it's only his half-sister.
Well, that is probably true, but still that is an emphasis that we will have to explore. And then if you go back through the rest of the story, you'll see that this kind of back and forth describing Tamar as Amnon's sister versus describing her as Avshalom's sister kind of becomes the operative theme in the whole parak, back and forth. Pasuk Hey, Vayomalo Yonadav, Shchav al Mishkavcha v'itchal. Yonadav gives Amnon an Eitzah, a suggestion. Go lie down in your bed, pretend you're sick, v'itchal. Your father will come to visit you. Say to him, Tavona Tamar Achoti. Let my sister Tamar come and bring me bread. And so, Amnon does. He lies down. He pretends he's sick. The king comes to him. Tavona Tamar Achoti. Let Tamar, my sister, come and make me a couple of cakes. So David turns to Tamar and says to Tamar, Lechina beit Amnon achich, go to the house of Amnon, your brother, and prepare food for him. And when actually Amnon turns and attacks Tamar, Tamar's response to him is, Pasuk Yudbet, Vatomer lo, al achi, al ta'aneni, no, my brother, don't force me. That is not what is done in Israel. Kilo yasekem b'Yisrael. Don't do this disgraceful act. Al taset hanevala hazot. We'll come back to that in a moment. But so she's certainly described as Amnon's sister, but we know that she is Avshalom's sister. And in fact, if you go down to the aftermath of this crime, she, after he throws her out and he locks the door behind her, and she takes her ketonet pasim and she tears it, and she wears ashes, and she's demonstrating a sense of shame. Avshalom comes to her and says, "Vayomer elah Avshalom." Avshalom turns to Tamar and says, "Vayomer elah Avshalom achiha." So Avshalom, her brother, says, Ha'aminon achich haya'imach? Has Amnon, your brother, been with you? V'ata achoti, now my sister, achanishi, be silent. Achich, achichu, he is your brother. Alta shitiet libech l'davar zeh, do not take this thing to heart. Because he's now plotting what will happen down the road. V'ateshev Tamar v'shamerah bet Avshalom achiha. And so Tamar remains desolate in the house of her brother, Avshalom. And this back and forth through the whole perek is part of the tension. So let's put it into terms of who is Tamar, and more importantly, who is Avshalom and who is Amnon? These are three players we have not seen in the discussion. We haven't encountered them other than a casual reference here or there, but we have not had engagement with any of them up until this point. And so we really need to understand who Avshalom is and who Amnon is. That brings us to their lineage. Let's start from the very beginning. The first time we get a picture of the whole royal family, who's who? Who are the children and who are their mothers, in this case, because they have different mothers, is back in Perek Gimel of Shmuel Bet. Perek Gimel of Shmuel Bet was, for us, was an eon ago. It was at least 2, if not 3 years ago. All right. Shmuel Bet Perek Gimel. David is in Hebron. There is a great and extended war between the house of Shaul and the house of David. That's the civil war that took place after the death of Shaul and the followers of Shaul's house. And David is in Hebron, and the text gives us a picture of the whole family. Vayevaldu leDavid banim beChebron. In Hebron, the royal family is, or the first set of sons to David are born, namely, Vayi Bechoro, Amnon l'Achinom ha-Yisraelit. The oldest is Amnon, born to Achinom ha-Yisraelit. He is the Bechor. U'mishneu Kilav l'Avigayel Eshet Naval ha-Karmeli. Number 2 is Kilav, son of Avigail, wife of Naval ha-Karmeli. That was the story, if you remember, back in Shmuel Aleph, where David was still on the run, and he was looking for his soldiers for some food, and he was protecting the local shepherds and their flocks, and there was this particularly not nice person by the name of Naval, and he comes to David's men come to him and ask for food, and he refuses to give them, and so he takes his army to go and attack them, and his wife Abigail comes and calms David down and stops him from the bloodbath that would have taken place. And at the end of that perek, David marries her. Just a quick reference here, actually. Let's look at it for a second. I'll come back to this. This is Shmuel Aleph Perek Chafhei. Whole story of in the Kamel, Ish Gadol Ma'od, name is Naval, and at the end of the Perek, Avigail comes to David after Naval Karmeli dies, Vatelech Achrei Malachei David, Vatihilu Leisha, David offers her his hand in marriage, she accepts, Vatihilu Leisha. So he marries Avigail, wife of Naval Karmeli. However, the text tells us two more things. Ve'et Achinoam lakach David mi'Yisrael, v'tiena gam shtehen lo l'nashim. In addition to Avigail, this is after David has run away from Shaul's house, after he's run away from Michal, and the whole story that took place, he marries Avigail, but we are told that he also, and this is a translation we have to be careful of, v'et Achinoam lakach, Achinoam, he had taken, David had taken from Israel, meaning that Achinoam, a Israelite, was married to David first. And then, it's telling us, in addition to marrying Abigail, he had already married Achinoam from Israel, Emig Israel, And they both were his wives. And Shaul took Michal and gave Michal away to Palti ben Laish, so Michal is out of the picture. So there's three psukim at the end of Shmuel Allah, Perek Chaf Hei. It's kind of a picture of the wives of David at that time, when he was still a young David running away from Shaul. Now he is Melech in Chevron, and we have a picture of the household. So the first thing we know is that this Achinoam, a Yisraelite, who was David's first wife chronologically after Michal, gave birth to the Bechor, namely Amnon. The second son is Kilav, to Avigail, Eshet Navala Carmeli. Hashlishi, the third, Avshalom, ben Macha bat Tamai Melech Geshur. Avshalom, son of Macha, daughter of Tamai, king of Geshur. Unclear where Geshur is. Most Mefarshim place it in the Golan Heights. Others suggest maybe it's down near Egypt. But that's a story we'll come to. The fourth, Varevi'i, Adoniah ben Chagit. Who is Adoniah? Adoniah, Adoniah. Who is he? Anybody remember who Adoniah is? End of the book of Shmuel, beginning of the book of Kings. After Avshalom kills Amnon, and after Avshalom dies in the rebellion of Avshalom, the book of Kings ends, and Shmuel ends, the book of Kings begin, and in the opening chapter of the book of Kings, David is on his deathbed, and there is a threat to the throne. Somebody wants the throne instead of Shlomo. Who is the somebody who wants the throne instead of Shlomo? Adoniah ben Chagit. Makes sense, right? He's the next, as they say, the next one standing, if you will. Anybody other than Shlomo is basically the theme of that rebellion. V'achamishi, the fifth in line, Shvatya ben Avital. And the sixth, Yitra'am le'egla eshet David. The sixth is Egla Yitra'am, wife of David. Not clear exactly who this Egla eshet David is. There's a medrash that says that she is actually Michal, who comes back to David after the kingdom is united and the rebellion is put down. But David rejects Michal after the story with the ark, if you remember. And so she kind of, her child Yitra'am, never becomes eligible for the throne from David's perspective. That's the theory in Pasuk Hey. All right. So, here's your royal family. These are the psukim that I just read. Amnon, son of Yisrael, of Achinoam, Kilav, son of Eshet Navala Karmeli, Avshalom, son of Macha bat Tamai, Adoniah ben Chagit, Shvatya ben Avital, and Yitra'am ben Egla. Okay, so the rest of the story from Sefer Shmuel will deal with the power tension and struggle between Avshalom and Amnon. Who is the heir to the throne?
Yep. Amnon.
Amnon is the oldest. He's the Bechor. He is, without question, the heir to the throne, except for the problem of Shlomo. But as I said at the end of our study of Bathsheba, Shlomo, though he's mentioned as having been born in Perek Yudbet, the operative theory is that Shlomo is not born until many years later. There's a number of children in between who die, and so Shlomo is not born until at least 5 years later, if not longer, most likely after the rebellion of Avshalom. I shared with you the theory that that's why Shlomo is named Shlomo, because he's named after Avshalom. That was all piling up a postscript to last year's shiur on David and Bathsheba. But if Avshalom is the son of Macha bat Tamai Melech Geshur, and Amnon is the son of Achinoam Yisraelite, who is Tamar? So, sense of it, on the face of it, it would seem that if Tamar is the sister of Avshalom, that means that Tamar and Avshalom are the children of Macha bat Tamai Melech Geshur, and Amnon is the son of Achinoam Yisraelite. And so how is Tamar Avshalom's sister and Amnon's sister, simply put?
David's their father.
They share the same father.
She shares a stepbrother.
Yeah, she's a stepsister because they share a father, or a half-sister is actually probably more accurate, because they share the same father. David is the father of Tamar and of Shalom. David is the father of Amnon. It's fascinating that Tamar is never described as the daughter of David. That's a separate issue we'll come to much later. But the emphasis on the relations is very clear. Tamar is sister of Avshalom from Ma'acha and David. Amnon is the son of David and Achinoam. And that's how the story unfolds. Except for one hitch, one problem. That would work, except for a detail. Let's look at this detail for a second. Let's go back to our story, and let's go back to the moment when Tamar faces Amnon alone. Amnon says to everybody in Pasuk Tet, "V'tikachat ha'masret v'titzok lefanav v'imein le'achol." He refuses to eat from her. He wants her to come into his chamber alone. "V'yomer Amnon atziu kol ish me'alai." Let every man leave. Right? I want to get everybody out. Everybody out except Tamar. "V'yomer Amnon al Tamar, havi habirya ha'cheder." Bring me the food into the bedroom. "V'tikach Tamar to levivot." She takes the cake. She goes into the bedroom. Vategesh elav le'achol, she brings the food to him. Vayachazek ba, he grabs her. Vayomer la, boy shichvi miachoti. Come lie with me, my sister. Her response, vatomer lo, al achi, no, my brother, al ta'aneni, don't force me. Ki lo yaseh kan b'Yisrael, that such a thing is not done in Israel. Al taseh ta nevela hazot, do not do this disgraceful thing. V'ani ana olich et cherpati, where will I carry my shame? V'ata tiyeh k'chad ha'nevelim b'Yisrael, and you will be like one of the disgraced of Israel. And we will re-examine these psukim a little bit later, but not today, a little in another shir, we'll talk about what she's trying to convey to Amnon. What is she trying to sort of convince him of? But then we get to Pasuk Yud Gimel, and what does she say? V'ata daber na lamelech ki lo yimna eni mimeka. All you need to do is speak to the king. He won't withhold me from you. If you wanted my hand, just speak to the king. Ask him for my hand in marriage. I don't know what you want to do. Just talk to the king. He won't hold me. He won't withhold me. He'll approve it. Why do you need to force it when you have a better path, a kosher path in front of you? And when he refuses to listen, v'lo avar lishmo b'kola, and he grabs her, v'yichazek mimena, v'yaneh, v'yishkav ota, he forces her, v'yisna'eh, then he turns all of that love and lust into hatred. That too is a shir into itself. V'yisna'eh, amnon sin'ah gdola, ma'od ki gdola, sin'ah she'sna'eh me'avar sh'ra'eva. He turns all of that love into hate, and he says to her, get up and leave. Kumi lechi. To which she responds and says, "V'tomer lo, al odot hara'a gdola zot me'acheret asher asita imi l'shalcheni. This wrong that you do now in sending me away is worse than what you did before." Meaning, what's the expectation? If you've raped me and you've taken me, then okay, so now you have to marry me. But wait a second. They're half siblings. They share, right? She's a half sister with a common father. I'm very confused, because that is a direct violation of a biblical verse. Right? The Torah is very clear that a half sister is an erev and a forbidden relation. Pasuk, the Torah says it three times. in source 8, Vayikra Perek Yudchet, Ervat Achotcha Bat Avicha O Bat Imecha, your sister, daughter of your father, or daughter of your mother, whether born at home or born outside, Maledet Bayit, Maledet Chutz, Lot Galer Vatan, they're an erva, forbidden relation. Cursed is the one who lies with the sister, the daughter of his father, or the daughter of his mother, full sister or half sister. Doesn't matter. A half sister is equally forbidden as a forbidden relation. So what was she expecting? What was she saying to Amnon when she says to him in Pasuk Tet, just speak to my father, he won't hold me back, he won't deny you my hand. Just talk to him. About what? About incest? This is the mystery of the story. So here we have no choice but to start to explore the background to who Tamar is and how it is possible. How is it conceivable that there should be a permissible path for Amnon and Tamar? Is there a permissible path for Amnon and Tamar if she is in fact a half-sister? And if there is, this statement that she makes, Ki lo yimne'eni mimecha, is as shocking to us, meaning it's surprising to us that there would be this option of a permissible path, but it also raises the question of Yonadav ben Shimei Achi David, right? Yonadav's original suggestion to Amnon that set up the scenario was based on the assumption that this was the only path forward, that he needed to find a way to gain access to her in some sort of forbidden path fashion, because it wasn't available to, because she wasn't available to him in a permissible fashion. Well, Tamar just said that that's not so. So I'm very confused. Okay, so let's take a look. So Chazal actually addressed this question directly. Chazal have a whole sugi about the story of Tamar and Amnon in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And the solution that the Gemara offers is a solution we need to explore. It starts with the question of who, let's do it over here, who is Ma'acha bat Tamai Melech Gishur? Who is this mother who is the daughter of the king of Gishur? How did this union between the king, the daughter of the king of Geshur, and David come about? And does it matter, or does it impact the story of Tamar? So here's what the Gemara says, and we're going to have to unpack it carefully. I'm going to view the Marav. Tamar bat Yifat Torah haita. Tamar was the daughter of a Yifat Toar. What's a Yifat Toar? Ancient Yifat Toar.
A woman captured in battle.
It's a parasha at the beginning of Parashat. It's a mitzvah in the beginning of Parashat Ki Tetzeh, that a soldier goes out to battle in war, who sees a beautiful woman, is allowed to take her, provided that he brings her into the house and gives 30 days to allow the passion of war to settle, and then etc. And then if she chooses to remain with him, he is allowed to have her and to take her as a wife. That's the parsha of Eshet Yifat Torah. It's a very strange mitzvah altogether. Rashi makes the observation there in Parshat Ki Tetzeh that the entire mitzvah of Eshet Yifat Torah was kind of an appeasement of the Yetzer, of the desire of the, recognizing the Yetzer of the battle of soldiers in battle. If you don't find a mechanism by which to allow it, in which to create an allowance, he'll take her anyway in a manner that's not allowed. And that's the basic theory. Okay, so what this Gemara is suggesting is that this Ma'acha, Bat Tamai, Melech Geshur. At some point or another, David is in war with the king of Geshur. And the daughter of the king of Geshur, Macha, is taken by David in battle as a Yifator. With me? Okay. Wrong page. And therefore what? And says the Gemara, Shene'emar be'atad daberna al ha-melech ki lo yimne eini mimeka. How do I know that Tamar was the daughter of a Yifator? Because she says to Amnon, lo yimne eini mimeka, that the king will not withhold me from you. Meaning, Isal kedaitach bat nisuin havai, if you tell me that she is born from a union of marriage, then she is a sister. Ach de mi evesharile, who could ever permit Amnon as a sister, Tamar as a sister to Amnon? Elish mamina bat yifator aita. From there we learn that she is the daughter of a yifator. That's all the Gemara says. Somehow this notion that she is the daughter of a yifator creates an exemption from that rule about the prohibition of a sister. In what way? So here's where the Mefarshim begin to... Yes, the question?
Yeah, but David's still the father.
Mm-hmm. Correct. So here's what Rashi says. And this is now is going to become a multiple... It's going to get a little confusing. We're going to learn a sugya in Gemara today. So it's a little bit confusing, but there are different understandings amongst the Rishonim of different interpretations in the Rishonim how to understand this Gemara. Rashi takes the approach as follows. Achot Avshalom bat Yifat Torah haita. This Tamar, sister of Avshalom, was the daughter of a Yifat Torah, meaning kodem shenit gaira belev shalem, before she converted with the complete heart. Macha imo yalda lo leDavid et Tamar. Macha, her mother, gave birth to Tamar. I mean, Tamar is the older sister, older than Avshalom. Avshalom is born later. And Tamar is born in a time, in a kind of a middle ground, before she converted. And therefore, her status is daughter of a Gentile princess before she converts. Avshalom is, of course, born after she had converted as a Yifator, and therefore, her status was that of a daughter of a Yifator prior to her conversion.
Her paternity might even be in question. Who's her father?
Wait, don't jump ahead of me. Okay? I just got to work with what it says. Then we'll get more complicated. Rashi says this twice. Rashi says it in Sanhedrin, and he says it again in Parsha in Shmuel. Ki lo yimne'eni mimecha, shemuteret ani lecha, I'm permissible to you. Lefi shenitabra bi imi, my mother became pregnant with me, kishihi aita nochrit, yifetor, when she was still a nochria, when she was still a Gentile. Because David, shelakcha David ba milchama, because David took her in war. A child born from a man and a handmaid, Gentile handmaid, a shivcha, which would have been her status prior to her conversion, is not considered his child in the legal sense. Okay? Radak makes the similar point. Tamar bat yifat Torah haita. As our sages say, based on that pasuk, ki ma'acha imo shel Avshalom lakcha David b'milchama v'shechav ima kodem shenitgaira. That act of David taking her and laying with her prior to her conversion, she is conceived from that union. She is therefore conceived in a moment prior to her conversion. Doesn't have the status of a child born to a Jewish mother, and therefore is of a secondary status, whatever her status is, but it creates this loophole that she's no longer prohibited to Amnon. So says Tvedak, so says Rashi, so says the Rabag, host of Rishonim. Now, there's two problems here we need to recognize just in terms of the interpretation. Number one, the assumption, the operational assumption here is that the mitzvah of Yifat Tar allows the soldier to actually have relations with the woman he captures or takes prior to her conversion. That's not at all universally accepted, meaning that's a matter of great controversy. But that's the assumption Rashi is making, the Radak is making, the Rabag is making, that because David was allowed to be with Ma'achab before she converted, and then she converts, therefore Tamar is permissible to Amnon. That's their understanding of the Gemara. From a Pshat perspective, it is a very difficult interpretation to weave back into the story. First of all, it would require a great deal of halachic nuance to be part of the conversation. And even if it wasn't so much halachic nuance, but more cultural nuance, it still assumes a great deal of series of events that are not in the text. It doesn't say anything about her being a Yifat Tor. It doesn't say anything about David capturing her in battle. It doesn't say anything about David having relations with her in the heat of battle and then bringing her home and then converting her and then marrying her and then have Avshalom. And so Tamar is kind of in no man's land or no woman's land. Unclear. So the Abarbanel, who is sort of coming at this from the perspective of trying to understand the pshat of the perek, is very bothered by this interpretation. And he writes the following. I'm going to read it in translate because I think it's very important to see both sides of the controversy, and then we'll kind of see if we can sort it out. Ukefi pshat v'asvara ha'yishara, according to the pshat, and logic, simple, straight logic. Hadat hazeh rechoku mimeni v'asecha lo yizbalua. This interpretation, that the reason why Amnon and Tamar are permissible, that Tamar is permissible to Amnon, is because she's the daughter of a Yifat Tor in this kind of moment of passion that's now permissible, is not only is it not in the pshat, but it is logically, intellectually unacceptable. Because, number one, let's assume we admit, we acknowledge, let's assume for the moment that David, in his youth, right, this is David many years ago, this is David when he's in Hebron, David long before the story of Bathsheba, right, this is David when he was still king of Hebron, that he should have relations with Macha in the heat of battle. Mashaloni is karba katuv, which is never mentioned in the text. Nor is it appropriate for a king who is a religious symbol, a spiritual leader, a king of Israel, that he should have relations with her. She should first have to convert, go through that whole 30-day process. How on earth could we entertain the possibility that would allow David to have relations with her before that act of conversion? It's just not tenable, says the Abarbanel. In addition, and it's for some, let's assume for a moment that they had that relation and that she was impregnated from that moment. I'm going to skip a little bit. You're going to tell me that that one half a day prior to her conversion is going to make the difference between her status and Avshalom's status? Shnehem, meaning Avshalom and Tamar, Hayu b'nei David, they were both the children of David. They were both same mother, Ma'acha. They're both born in after she converted, right? Because it's only that moment of conception that's under question. The birth is after she converted. Rashi, Hilafish Shanit Abraham, Imam, Imenu, Yom, Yomayim, Kodim Shatit Kayer, Tiem, Utarat, Lanon Achia. And now you want to tell me that because she became pregnant 1 or 2 days prior to her conversion, now suddenly she's completely out of the family and she's allowed to marry Amnon? Makes no sense, says the Abba Benel. I can't accept it. On the other hand, he can't ignore the fact that Tamar said to Amnon, right? Ask David, he'll allow it. Lo yimna eni mimeka. So therefore the Abba Benel says, imaita mutarat li nase elav, right, just to add another piece of it, if in fact she was permissible to marry Amnon, like Rashi and the Radak and all of these Mefarshim, as wonderful as they are, but if they are correct, assuming that she is permissible to marry him, then why the charade? Why doesn't Amnon just go to David and ask for Tamar's hand in marriage? Why does he have to feign illness? Why does Yonadav even suggest that he feign illness? That would have been much simpler than what Yonadav contrived. Yonadav suggests, oh, this whole ruse, you should pretend to be sick and invite her to come and have dinner. What for? Just go to the king and ask for a hand in marriage. It's so simple. Aval emet yored darko shehaya zeh bilti efshar kefi hadin v'hatorah. Reality is, she was a half-sister, and she's not permissible to Amnon, and you don't need the whole story of the Ifatoar, and they could have been just legitimate children of the daughter of David, and Ma'acha was a royal marriage between David and the house of Talmai Melech Geshur. He married the princess Ma'acha. What a wonderful union, alliance of kingdoms, and their union gave birth to Tamar and Avshalom. V'yomnam, Masha, Mra, Tamar, Daberna, Lamelech, ki lo yimne'eni mimeko, when she says to Amnon, just talk to the king, he won't deny me to you. Lo amra ki imli netzel miyado, umi'atzad sheve'er, v'tanchumim shel hevel ayu, v'ratzda ledachoto bekash. She really didn't mean it. She would have said anything to get to push him back. But it's to the idiomatic expression to push away with the straw, with a piece of hay, meaning with a grass, right? There's no real substance to her argument. She is simply trying to distract him, get him confused, get him to kind of withdraw and find a different path. Okay, that's separate issue. So that's his argument, that in fact she's not permissible to, and there's no path that would allow Tamar to marry Amnon, and that she really didn't mean it when she said to Amnon, just talk to the king. That's not what she meant. The problem is, and it solves all of the uncomfortableness of the Fator interpretation. The Rabbi Menel simply doesn't see that in the Pshat. But as on the other hand, it reopens all the questions we raised at the beginning. So why doesn't Amnon? So why does she say that I'm permissible to you, and why, right, what is going on in the context of Tamar and Amnon, and what was Yonadav thinking, right, to bring them together, knowing that she's in Erva and that it's an act of incest, and so what was he going to expect to come out of it? So that's also very, very difficult, and Yonadav is described as an ish chacham me'od. He's a very wise man. So it's true, there are Mefarshim, and I showed you this last week, there are Mefarshim who say that accolade of Chacham is a negative. Right? Chacham meaning cunning, Rashi says Rasha Mitzuda David Chacham Lara, but the Malbim stubbornly says no. At Satoi Tab Secha V'Achlatov, Yonadav's intention was good. Yonadav's intention, whatever his intention was, but it was good. So how could Yonadav's intentions be good if he's suggesting that Amnon be alone with Tamar, who's an erva to him, and expect them to have dinner together? Chacham, naive, I'm not sure how to describe Yonadav in that regard. So we're going to take a different approach. We're going to leave Rashi over here, and the Barbanel over here, and we're going to take a third approach. And the third approach is that of Tosfot on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that same Gemara that we started with about the Yifat Torah. And Tosfot is very bothered by this position of Rashi that sees an allowance for David and Machaz, the Yifat Torah, to have relations on the battlefield, so to speak. And he says, based on another Gemara in Yerushalmi, Tosfot says, there's no allowance for relations prior to conversion under any circumstances. So if that's true, and if she is a Yifat Torah and Macha, and Tamar is Avshalom's sister, then I come back to my original question. How is Tamar permissible to Amnon? Says Tosfot very simply, Akein nira lomar, De Tamar lo heita bat David. That Tamar was not David's daughter. She ima kvar heita muberet kishaba lemuchama. She was either already pregnant when she entered the war, which would be along the lines of what David said, which means that the paternity of her paternity is in question, or I'll give you a better option. And the fact that the pasuk says v'adichtiv gichen tilbashta benot ha-melachim, that she's the daughter of kings, meaning she gadla b'cheko shel David. She grew up in David's house. She was born as she was born in David's house. David raised her. Kari lebat melech. But David was not the father. So if David was not the father, who's the father? So Tosfot has this notion that somehow she was pregnant, but not from David. I'll give you a simpler answer. Let's assume for the moment, take a step back, and let's assume for the moment that this is not a Yifat Torah case, or it's a Yifat Torah case, but that turns into a royal marriage. David conquers the area of Melech Geshur. Tamai Melech Geshur is still alive. He comes back to the story of Avshalom. Avshalom runs away to the kingdom of Geshur, because Avshalom runs to his grandfather. And maybe Ma'acha had a child prior to the marriage of David and Ma'acha. In which case, whoever the father is, I don't know, it doesn't matter. But the father is prior to the marriage of David and the Ma'acha. And David is not Tamar's father, he is Avshalom's father. Yeah.
So if that were to be the case, and David is not the father, which is okay, I'm with you on that, that means that Tamar was born before Macha's conversion.
Correct. She's born before the marriage of David and Macha altogether. My argument is that she's born, she's a young child. She's born from a previous marriage.
So does she go through a conversion then?
The status is. Conversion is such an amorphous process in Tanakh, because that we talked about before. But whatever Ramacha's status is, but she's not a blood relation to David, and she's therefore not a blood relation to Amnon. That's the key. She's a half-sister, not to Amnon. She's a half-sister to Avshalom. She's a stepsister, but with no blood relation whatsoever to Amnon. So they've grown up in the same household. They've grown up in the same palace. She's achoto. She's a sister in the sense that she, the same way that she's Bat David. But she's not, in any legal sense, the daughter of David, nor in any legal sense, the sister of Amnon, and therefore the path between them is not prohibited. I'll show you two very interesting proofs to this theory, or indicators, not really proofs, but indicators, supports for this theory. Go back to the beginning of the parak for a second. Let's do it here. Let's look at these, the psukim, the same psukim that I showed you before, that describe Tamar as either Avshalom's sister or Amnon's sister. Right? We had a whole series of psukim that I showed you at the beginning that emphasized that she was Avshalom's sister, and other psukim that emphasized that she was Amnon's sister. There's a pattern there. She's, when you want to pull up the heartstrings of how evil Amnon was, you emphasize that Amnon, that Tamar was Amnon's sister. When you want to describe her legal status, you describe her as Avshalom's sister. It's a trick of the language. But take a look at how she is described. Actually, let's go back to the first pasuk. V'hi achrei chen, ula Avshalom ben David achot yafa ushma Tamar. V'yaveh Amnon ben David. Avshalom ben David has a sister, beautiful sister named Tamar. Amnon ben David loved her. From that point forward, she is described as Tamar achot Avshalom achi, Avshalom achia, achoti, Avshalom achia, Tamar achoto, Avshalom Tamar achoto, or achot Amnon, Amnon achia. There's one description that's never applied. She's described as Avshalom's sister. She's described as Amnon's sister. She's never called
David's daughter.
David's daughter. Correct. And the first pasuk so conspicuous. Avshalom ben David, Amnon ben David, but Tamar is Achot Avshalom. So on the one hand, you could read that it's just emphasizing the evil of the story, right? That it's because it's a sister, an incest, etc. But on the other hand, if in fact it's not so clear that it's a case of incest, that in fact that she is permissible to him and that he nonetheless rapes her and violates her, that's a separate issue we'll come to, she is not David's daughter. That's essentially the Chiddush of Tosfot, that David is not the father. Hashem, an interesting additional observation. I'm going to hold these psukim here for a second. Let's do a quick glance at. I have it on the sheet. Yes, I'm going to do it this way. At the end of in Divayim in Paragimel, I showed you the other place we looked at these psukim when we looked at Shlomo and Batsheva. The other place where the lineage of David's household is mentioned. And there, the children of David, those same psukim that we had in Perek Gimel, which described the wives of David and the children from those unions, appears in Divrei Hayamim, with an additional paragraph we're going to look at. Ve'ele hayu b'nei David, asher nolad lo b'chevron, the children of David who were born in Chevron. Habachor Amnon Achinom Yisraeli, number one. Sheni, the second one, Daniel, or what was referred to in Shmuel as Kilav, is referred to in Yamim as Daniel, Lavigayel Carmelit, number two. Number three, Avshalom ben Ma'acha bat Tamai Melech Kishon. Number four, Adoniah ben Chagit. Number five, Shvatya Lavital. Number six, Yitram Legla Ishto. Shisha nolad lo b'chevron, these six born to David in Chevron. V'ayimloch shem sheva shalim v'shisha chodashim, 30 shana nach v'Yerushalayim, 7 years he's in Chevron, 33 years he's in Yerushalayim. Ve'ele noldu lo b'Yerushalayim. Now part two of his family in Yerushalayim. He has the following children. Shim'a, Shovav, Natan, Ushlomo, Arba'al, Batshua, Batamiel. That was the pasuk we looked at when we said that Shlomo is the first to the throne, but he's not the first child of Bathsheba. He's the fifth, if you include the one that died without before his bris, because the first four died, and that was our interpretation of the fourfold, the Kivsei Shalim Arbatayim. That's just a review of last year's material. These were all the children of David, in addition to the children of the Pilakshim. You ready? In addition to all of these, V'tamar achotam, and Tamar their sister. Well, she doesn't get to be described even as one of the Bnei David. No, she's Tamar achotam. She's their sister. Why? Says Tosfot, because David is not her father. Simple. Very powerful suggestion. Very simple suggestion. The problem is that it's a simple suggestion that opens up, you'll forgive the expression, a can of worms. Because what's the implication? I'm going to stop sharing for a second. What's the implication? Now let's go back and review the story. According to this assumption, what's the implication vis-a-vis David and vis-a-vis Amnon and Tamar? When Tamar says to Amnon, just why should you do this? Just speak to my father, he won't deny you my hand. Was she simply trying to push him away with what the Barbanel calls push him away with the straw, or was she serious? Was there really a legal path forward for them? According to what Tosfot is suggesting, and according to what we're implying, the answer is yes. That this whole tragedy could have been avoided. But if that's the case, it begs an even bigger question, which is, who's at fault here? Who's at fault here?
Well, for sure, Amnon is at fault.
Yes, I'm not going to absolve Amnon of anything. That is true. But there's another question that begs itself.
Well, maybe
King David.
Go ahead, one at a time.
Maybe David said that they should not get married, and so that's why. And he didn't. He thought instead of it being not allowed from moral reasons, maybe it just wasn't allowed for parental reasons.
Maybe.
And he was because David could kill anybody he wanted to.
Maybe, but the problem is, we have no conversation with David to prove one way or the other. So we don't know what David said.
Yes, sure we don't.
Right?
Is Tamar at fault because she knew?
That would be blaming the victim. That far I'm not prepared to go. But there's another part. There's another part of the story. That if there's a permissible path forward for them, then there's another person in the story whose behavior is shocking.
Yonadav.
And that's exactly the question the Abarbanel raises. Then it comes back to that becomes on us to try to understand Yonadav's suggestion, because if in fact Lamnon Reu Shmo Yonadav Ben Shima Achi. Yonadav was very wise. Here it says very cunning, which is a description of the evil, right? To suggest that it's a negative, that he was wise and cunning, and that he perpetrated, the whole thing is orchestrated by Yonadav. So he says to Amnon, I will set it all up. You'll have access to her, access without anybody else, and you can do, you take her and do what you want. That's what Yonadav was thinking. So first of all, that's very strange. Why describe him as Ish Chacham Mo'od? Second of all, at the end of the story, when Avshalom kills Amnon, and David thinks that he had killed the entire royal family. Remember that moment when David hears and he thinks that he killed all the Bnei HaMelech. He kavsha om et kol Bnei HaMelech. Vayan Yonadav ben Shima achi David. Yonadav turns to David and says to him, Vayomer al yomar adoni et kol anarim Bnei HaMelech emidu. No, don't think that that Avshalom has killed all the members of all the children of the king. No, ki Amnon levadom met. He's only killed Amnon. Why? Because Amnon, Avshalom was determined to kill Avshalom. Sorry, let's do this again. Avshalom was determined to kill Amnon from the day that he forced himself upon his sister.
Was Yonadav there to witness that it was only Amnon that was killed? Or is this part of his...
He knew, because he knew Avshalom. And he knew what was going on. What David didn't know, Yonadav knew very well. And I suspect others also knew. Yonadav was far smarter than most of the others there. That's why he's called Ish Chacham Od. He knew exactly what happened. But there's not an iota of remorse for Amnon in this statement. His sympathies lie with Avshalom. Now, if he had been the one to suggest in the first place to Amnon that he do this, you'd think at some point the text would say that some level that he felt, that this was, he sided with Amnon, he sympathized with Amnon, on the contrary, it sounds like he felt as betrayed by Amnon's behavior as anybody else. So that's the question we need to explore. What was Yonadav suggesting? What was Yonadav thinking? If there really was an open path forward for Amnon and Tamar, and it wasn't so complicated, then why do we end up in this very horrific story based on the Eitzah, based on the suggestions of Amnon, the suggestions of Yonadav?
You think he was trying to make trouble so that he could get Avshalom to be king?
I don't think so, because that would not describe him as Ish Chacham Ma'od. I come back to this issue, and again, it's machloket Rashi in the Malbim whether or not this is a positive or negative. According to Rashi, he's cunning and he's evil, and that's just the way it is, right? And he's conspiring with Amnon in this regard. But the Malbim says no. Malbim says that this was etzat tova besechel v'achlatov, only intended good. So that means we have to explore what was Yonadav's suggestion and what did it end up becoming and who betrayed whom.
If we're going with the interpretation that Tamar is not David's daughter, that is from another relationship or whatever, was that public knowledge? Because she grew up in the palace and she grew up as David is her father. She even said David was her father. Is it public knowledge? Did Yonadav know that she was not about David or not?
We don't have evidence either way other than what the text tells me. The text doesn't tell me a lot here. But it's hard to, it's not the kind of thing you can hide. Again, there's two ways to look at it. According to the way the Tosfot seems to imply is that she was pregnant already when she came into the marriage with David. It may be a little more complicated, but I'm suggesting that it's much more possible, that it's much more even open than that. That she was simply a child from a different union, from a previous marriage.
So did Yonadav know that?
Then I would
that he didn't
case,
suggest
I would assume everybody knew that.
They just go and get married?
I would assume everybody knew that.
So why didn't he just say, go and marry her?
So therefore, we have our work cut out for us. Right? If it was that simple, we'd just say, okay, done. Right? So this is like every other parak in Tanakh, which is a puzzle that needs to be unraveled. Okay, so that's our work for us, so cut out. So we have over the next 2 weeks our exploration of We've introduced ourselves to Tamar. We've introduced ourselves to Avshalom and Amnon. Now we need to introduce ourselves to Yonadav and to understand what was Yonadav thinking, and ultimately, who betrayed whom.
Do you think that Yonadav wasn't saying to force her? Just saying, maybe you could ask her, just like go on a date or something and say, do you want to marry me?
I don't want to give away that much information yet, but we'll come back to it.
Oh, is
I'm not. You're not so far off, but we'll see.
So, is our Tamar coincidentally named after the Breishit Tamar? It does Tamar? Have no.
This Tamar wasn't Jewish.
No.
With Yehuda and Tamar.
Yeah.
No. Tamar is not a Jewish name at that point in time.
Uh huh.
Rabbi, I want to thank you for your clarification. It reminds me a little bit of Abbott and Costello, who's on first.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oy.
Okay, so we have our work cut out for ourselves. The next couple of weeks, we'll look at Yonadav, and then we'll try to put all the pieces of the puzzle together.
Thank you.
All right. My pleasure. Thank you all for joining.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Hi, Gabby.
Yes, Shir Cohen.